So looking back 3 years ago when we last had this set of readings and this psalm, I realized that what I had planned to speak on today I had already spoken about in 2021, though I do want to address it slightly differently now. And what I want us to note is that the passage from Mark's Gospel, which we heard a few moments ago, read wonderfully as always by Karen, chapter 16, verses 9 to 16, is considered somewhat sketchy by biblical scholars. Now, sketchy obviously is a technical term, so I should expand. It is noted in most contemporary translations that early manuscripts of Mark don't contain these verses. That's something of an understatement. There are very few manuscripts that contain these verses, although Irenaeus, or Irenaeus, depending on where you were brought up, because I was brought up with Irenaeus and was told it was wrong recently, did comment on it in the AD 178. So the early versions of Mark's Gospel, the very earliest versions of Mark's Gospel, don't contain 9 to 20, which is the longer ending of Mark. The Expositor's Greek commentary, not something I turn to very often, but I found the notes very helpful, tells us that the verses between 9 and 20 in this passage of Mark 16 deliberately echo sections of John, Luke, and Matthew in three different parts, almost like they were added later, like after when the other Gospels were circulating in the 40 or so years following the time we believe that this Gospel was originally completed. And it's important to note and to restate that this is a reminder that the words that are compiled, that compile what we call the New Testament, our Christian scripture, are not as clear-cut as we might think. And that scholarship is always opening up new understandings or questioning assumptions or challenging the ways we believe our scriptures are constructed. Scholars and preachers and others talk of a closed canon of Scripture, meaning that which was settled on by some of the early councils of the church, particularly the ones around the end of the 4th century and the beginning of the 5th. There had been various very similar collections of the books of both Hebrew and Christian scriptures, which now make up our Bibles, since the middle to the end of the 2nd century. But the concept of the closed canon was very much in the mindset of the influential theologian Augustine of Hippo, who was responsible for convening many of the councils which decided what was in, or more importantly perhaps, or more tellingly, what was out. I do get, indeed I have affirmed in public many times, that we have in the church an authoritative set of documents that make up our scriptures. These contain within them the stories, histories, teachings, reflections that are the grounding of our faith. I have no problem with that, which I know my bishop would be glad to hear, because if I did, I would be breaking my ordination vows. I do believe that our Bibles are inspired writings, that the Spirit of God was a part of this process of revelation which brought us our scriptures, that God is revealed in the wrestling, the questionings, the poetry, the myth, the metaphors, the symbols which our scriptures share with us and which our forebears in faith have bequeathed to us. In the Anglican tradition, we hold that our Bibles are indeed part of three authoritative sources which undergird our particular expression of the Christian faith, the other two being tradition and reason. Scripture, reason, and tradition are held together, each used to interpret, question, and challenge the others. A 16th century Anglican divine, which is a fancy name for a theologian who's a clergy person, Richard Hooker, originally posited. Which leads me on to my main point, and there is one, I promise. What I think our little quirky nubbin from Mark's Gospel really points us to is the danger of thinking that alongside the canon of Scripture, somehow divine truth is closed, and that the only way of seeing the divine is in the pages of our Bibles. Even the source and structure of our Bibles is under constant revision. For instance, the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls in Qumran in the 1940s offered fragments of older versions of the Hebrew texts than had ever been available before, and have influenced nearly all contemporary translations which we have of our Bibles, as have other documents which seem to constantly crop up with fragments, passages, scraps of both Hebrew and Christian texts. Not only that, but there are many other documents and other items such as tablets and inscriptions on various items which were contemporary with those that make up our Christian scriptures and which never made it to canon, but still teach us much about how those earlier Jesus followers were in many and diverse ways, how they were talking about their experience of encounters with the divine and recording the disagreements, the experiences, and struggles of the Jesus movement of the first centuries. We can still learn much from them. And last, but in no ways least, truth is not contained, nor is it confined to a particular place or time or document or set of documents. We know this, I'm sure, but so many locate truth only in scripture or in their own tradition or in their self-appointed teachers or gurus, whereas we know truth is found in the great revelation of the divine in creation, in prayer, in the diversity of spiritual traditions, in wisdom shared through the ages, in the writings of poets and prophets and scholars and mystics and comedians and historians. We find truth in art, in beauty, in music, in love, and in one another. So let's celebrate truth in our scriptures, yes, but wherever we find it, learning to discern the wisdom that binds us to one another, to this beautiful and broken world, and to the divine, day by day by day.